Welcome to Hamlet to Flow. This is your host Naren Rudra, and this is a very special episode with Justice Lao Nageshwar Rao. Everyone knows who he is, so there's no need for any introduction. So lay back, relax, and enjoy. So of all of these very phenomenal achievements, sir, which one demanded most of your grit? Like, which one was the most challenging? And welcome to Hamlet of Flow, sir. Very, very, very good evening.
Good evening. The initial stages of my career as a lawyer posed a tough challenge like any lawyer would agree that getting through the initial years and then staying in the profession is itself a challenge.
So these initial days include your time in the Guntur courts and then in the Hyderabad High Court and also the Supreme Court, right, sir?
I practiced law in Guntur for a very short while. My legal profession as such started only in the High Court of the undivided state of Andhra Pradesh. So the when I said initial phase, it relates only to my career as a lawyer in the High Court of Andhra Pradesh. I practiced here for 10 years. So the initial 5 years when I was working as a junior with a very renowned senior advocate, and the decisions that I had to take whether to continue in this profession as to what beholds in the future. So that would be a real cross road, as I said, that any lawyer would face this initially when he enters the profession. He would not know whether he would survive in the profession, whether he would succeed in the profession. So these are days which are tough, especially for somebody who doesn't have a legal background and then being a first-time lawyer.
And what prompted you to shift from Guntur to Hyderabad, sir?
As I said, though I started my career as a lawyer in Guntur, it was not really a serious effort. There were pressures from my family that I should join the family business, and I was not very comfortable in doing business. So that's the reason I started going to court, because I had a law degree. But I was not really seriously focusing on work in Guntur. I thought that I should come to Hyderabad and then pursue my career as a lawyer in the High Court. That's the reason I shifted to Hyderabad, and any serious effort of starting the professional activity started only at Hyderabad.
And after shifting to Hyderabad, sir, do you remember the first order you got or the first submissions you've made, and in which court was it, before which judge? Any of these first experiences, sir?
There was some waiting period for me after I started my profession at Hyderabad. I initially joined the chambers of one Mr. C. Ramakrishna, who was a government advocate then. So he was handling the departments of home and transport. So by virtue of assisting him, I was fortunate that he made me sit in the admission courts where I had to oppose senior counsel who were filing cases, the matters that they were filing. And I remember arguing a few matters as a government advocate. Thereafter, I joined the chambers of Mr. Vaisuranarayana after a year, by which time work started flowing from Guntur. And initially, I remember arguing some matters of termination of lecturers pursuant to a government decision of the then government, who were doing part-time jobs in residential colleges in the state of Andhra Pradesh. So there were a number of lecturers from Guntur and Krishna districts who were being threatened with the termination of their services. So we filed cases and then I argued those cases. I think those were the first important cases which I argued, which even went to the Supreme Court. I went to the Supreme Court, engaged a senior there. And thereafter, the government withdrew the NGOs.
And how were your initial working days, sir? Like, as a young lawyer who freshly entered the profession, like, how was your apprenticeship with your senior like?
I was fortunate in working with Mr. Vair Suryanarayana, who was a senior advocate by then, and he was a person who was very intelligent, and I've learned so many things from him. The way you do the client interview, the manner in which you draft writ petitions, and the manner in which you approach civil revisions or appeals that come from civil courts. So these are aspects which any junior lawyer would be learning only by working with an experienced and an efficient senior advocate. So having worked with him for about 4 years, I knew how to interview a client, find out what the problem is, what is the information that you seek from him before filing, before preparing a writ petition. And by watching your senior argue in court, you would know and learn the nuances of the trade, like how to deal with a difficult situation, the art of advocacy. These are things which you learn by observing people arguing in court, what to argue, what not to argue. But the fundamental aspect of any professional, especially a legal professional, is learning. So unless you work very hard and you are well aware of the case includes facts and the law, so you would not be confident in facing the judge, because there might be a number of questions that would be coming from the judge which you don't anticipate. So to become a complete lawyer, there are so many things that you learn to start with. Just coming out of college, having done your law degree, you are a novice. So these are things which you learn by practical experience in court.
And again, after moving to Hyderabad, what was the prompt for you to again move to the Supreme Court, sir?
I was very fortunate that I developed substantial work in the High Court of Andhra Pradesh. And because my senior was an expert in service law, I was doing a number of matters pertaining to service law and other matters in the high courts relating to elections to panchayats and the other general writ petitions that were filed. But after being here for about 10 years, I felt that there was no challenge left, because I was doing the same sort of matters day in and out. I had a big office where I had about 6-7 juniors, and then I had a number of cases, but most of the cases had become routine and they were not giving me any intellectual satisfaction. So I thought that I should shift to the Supreme Court, where I would get an opportunity to argue matters and deal with cases involving substantial questions of law and having more challenges. And the only reason I left here, though it was very risky at that time after putting about 10 years in Hyderabad, was that I felt that Supreme Court would really satisfy my intellectual appetite.
Did it satisfy, sir?
It did. It did. Though, again, I had to go through this difficult phase in the Supreme Court, having no godfathers, having nobody to support me in the Supreme Court. So I had to find my way. It took me almost a year or two to settle down. But again, thanks to the goodwill of my erstwhile colleagues from the High Court of Andhra Pradesh, I had the substantial support from them. There were a number of cases that were coming to me, which I filed. And I did not have to wait for too long a time, like most of the people who shift to the Supreme Court have to. So things were moving very smoothly after a year or two. I shifted in 1995. And then I started arguing cases from the state of Andhra Pradesh. And work from other branches of law from this High Court of state of Andhra Pradesh were also coming to me. So that was something which was refreshing, instead of my getting stuck to two, three particular branches. And it didn't take too long. Even before I was designated as a senior advocate in 2000, people from the other states, youngsters, seeing me arguing in courts, they used to ask me to argue their matters. So I was being engaged by people from Kerala, Tamil Nadu, and the other states from the North India also to argue their matters. That was quite a challenge because I was dealing with laws coming from the other states. And after I was designated as a senior in 2000, there was no looking back because I had substantial work. I was arguing at least 10 cases a day in the Supreme Court, and then I was getting matters from almost all the states. And as I was doing well, then I was offered to become an ASG by the then Law Minister, Sir Arun Jaitley. I was not very sure whether I was ready for it, but he said that I can do it. I accepted it, and I was an ASG for about 1 year, and thereafter the then government fell. But that 1 year again gave me a lot of exposure to arguing very important matters for the central government. And then from 2004 onwards, my practice picked up and I was doing very well. I appeared in almost all high courts in this country. I've appeared for almost all politicians in this country from every state. And I appeared for all state governments in the Supreme Court. So I was very lucky that way, that I had so many opportunities. So opportunities coming your way, you would definitely try to seize the opportunity, work hard, and then make a name for yourself. And yes, I think I did well for myself till 2016 when I became a judge.
So, in the Supreme Court, you never felt that your work has become saturated, like how you felt in the High Court, sir, or was it stimulating all along?
Yes, I did not have that feeling in the Supreme Court because the variety and repertoire of work in Supreme Court is endless. Because you have so many branches of law in the Supreme Court which you would not have practiced. So every day was a challenge because some new statute of some other, some high court coming to you for interpretation, different branches of law. It's not only constitutional and administrative law, but there are other laws like commercial law, and you have intellectual property, you have tax, you have tax in taxes, direct and indirect. So there's no end to challenges in the Supreme Court. So There's no way a lawyer can be very sure about which matter is going to come to you next if you're a sought after lawyer. And then you start working, trying to learn that law and then trying to find your feet in that particular branch of law. And then you're arguing against the best in the country. So there is always a challenge every day. So that's a never-ending thing, which you don't have in the high courts. High courts also, there are some lawyers who are exposed to various branches of law. But the level of advocacy and preparation, the manner in which cases are argued, the Supreme Court is definitely a challenge. I don't want to say anything against the practice in the high courts. There are very good lawyers in the high courts. The judges are also very good. But otherwise, once you're in the Supreme Court, you're open to the entire country. You're not restricted to a particular state. So whereas there are limitations for a lawyer in a state, he'll be handling only with branches of law in that state. He'll be looking into the local laws of that state apart from the constitution, which is applicable to the entire country. So that way, there's no saturation in the Supreme Court at all. So as you keep going up, there are new challenges every day.
So of all of these cases, is there any particular case that stands out, sir? Be it because of the prominence it has, the ramifications the case might have, any particular case?
There are hundreds of cases which I have argued, so I can't pick up one case on the basis of the importance of a person for whom I appeared or in the importance of the subject matter. I don't know. There might be a number of cases where I would have succeeded because I did well. At the same time, there are cases which I might have lost. So my practice was working very hard, trying to read more and more to learn not only the facts of the case but also the law. So the working hours were actually very difficult for people to keep pace with. I used to work till about 2 o'clock in the night. And I had very good juniors who were also working with me like that. As a senior in the Supreme Court, you get briefs till about 9 o'clock. You keep preparing for your matter for the next day morning. And with more work, you keep learning new things. You read the brief 2 times, you might get 2 different ideas. If you read it 3 or 4 times, you might get more ideas as to how you approach the matter. And by virtue of the experience that you have gained in the profession, your advocacy skills would definitely improve. You'll know how to handle a situation that you learn only in court. That's something which you don't get in books. And especially getting out of difficult situations, dealing with judges coming from different backgrounds and trying to somehow or the other get an order from such judges. So these are things which I learnt while doing the job. And once you are doing well, then you realize that hard work always pays. There are a few people who might be very intelligent. Their IQ is good and then they have photographic memory. They might be spending about half an hour's time to understand a brief. So I thought that unless you are very thorough with the brief and if you want to actually face them in court, you might have to do a little more work. So doing a little more work, if I didn't understand, I used to read it for 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. Then you are very well versed with the brief. So in which event, you prepare your brief very well. The next thing is what I used to do, which I used to tell all my juniors, and most of them are doing very well now as lawyers, is that apart from reading, you have to analyze what is there in the brief. You anticipate what the other side is going to argue. You anticipate from the brief what the judge is going to ask you. What are the probable questions? You know what the problems are in your brief and you read them because you are arguing in the final court. So anticipation of at least 75% of the questions that are going to come from the judge would be very useful for a lawyer, because you have a ready answer to what is being asked of you in court. A few things here and there you can manage, but if you're not prepared, if you're not anticipating what's going to come from the judge, then you will not be able to succeed. The Supreme Court is a place where the courtroom is a theater. That's where you're performing. And the lawyers who are there sitting in the courtroom is your audience. For a senior advocate, he has nothing to do with clients. He has nothing to do with lawyers coming from various parts of the country. It is those lawyers who are watching you perform who are your clients. They are the ones who are going to engage you. So, you're not arguing for them, but you're arguing for your client. The job that is given to you by a junior counsel is to ensure that the client gets a relief. But as you perform, as you try to get a relief for the client, you're arguing before an audience who are your prospective arguing briefing counsel. So this is how you develop work. It's only when you do well, and doing well is not doing once, you're doing repeatedly well. The way you handle a matter, the knowledge you have in law, the way you are handling the questions that are posed by a judge, and the preparation, all these are seen by the instructing counsel in courts. And they are the ones who come to you because they are happy that you prepare your brief well and then you are arguing your case well. And the way the judges are receiving you, all these are things that they watch. But for any legal professional, what is more important is, why is it that this profession is completely different from the other professions? You take any profession, they do their job and then go home. But in this profession, there is a large element of public service. When you are dealing with cases, you are trying to contribute to the development of law, the march of law. And you have at the back of your mind that you are also doing a constitutional duty, because they say that we are the law, legal professionals are the watchdogs of the constitution. You are doing your job of protecting the rights of individuals. So this is the most important thing that gives you a satisfaction.
But how is it for a normal advocate on record, sir, who's not a senior counsel?
For any advocate, what is to be learnt by the advocate is that there is no shortcut to succeeding in this profession. There are 2 lakh lawyers who are coming into the profession every year. The vast majority of them fall on the wayside. Very few people continue in this professional activity because of the uncertainty in the future. Lawyers should be ready to wait before they succeed. Lawyers should be ready to learn. Lawyers should be ready to work very hard. I've been seeing the present generation for the past 10 years, people, juniors who have worked with me, juniors who were law clerks with me. The present crop of advocates are extremely intelligent, coming from national law schools and even the other traditional law schools. Unlike what it was earlier, about 30, 40 years back, the profession of law is serious business now. Unlike the earlier days where people used to do this as a part-time activity, now they know that there's a lot of competition in the profession of law. Everybody is trying hard to succeed. But if a person who has entered the profession is willing to wait for about 5 years to 10 years, joins a very good office and starts working, and then learn his steps in a scientific manner, following a very good senior, Every lawyer will get an opportunity. The question is, when he gets an opportunity, whether he is ready to seize it by being ready in every manner to argue matters or whatever. So when something comes to you, whether you are ready to draft a matter, and thereafter when somebody asks you, it's all right, go and argue, whether you are ready to argue a matter, whether you are going to acquit yourself well. So the initial year should not be wasted by roaming around in canteens and verandas, which not many people do now. So they have to focus on work, they have to learn, and this process of learning would stand in good stead in the future as and when they get an opportunity. And my advice to junior lawyers is, you should have short-term goals and long-term goals. You should plan for the next 5 years. If you are joining a senior, you should think, what is it that I'm going to achieve in these 5 years? I want to learn. And after a period of 5 years, I want to start on my own. And then take an assessment after a period of 5 years as to what he has achieved, what he wanted to achieve, whether he has achieved that or not. And the long-term goal, what is it that you want to be? Whether you want to be an arguing counsel, whether you want to continue to practice in the civil court, you want to go to the higher court doing appellate work. If you are happy with what you are doing in the civil court, how is it that you hone your skills in cross-examination, arguing matters, dealing with clients? Select the branch of law which you are good at or which you have interest in, because unlike earlier where people are doing all sorts of matters, now it's a period of specialization in branches of law. The future lies in your focusing on a particular branch of law and doing well, though you might be doing other cases also if you want to become a senior counsel. There are so many avenues and there are so many opportunities for persons who want to succeed in this profession, and they should be speaking to others to find out as to how they proceed, where they should work, what branch of law they should choose, and where is it that they will be more comfortable. So these are things which a youngster should choose. And then, as I said, ultimately it is the work that you do and the discipline that you have that would make you a successful professional. Apart from anything else, you should be a good individual. A legal professional should not only think of himself, he should think of his clients, because they are his gods, and they should think of the society. So, as I said, this is the only profession where you have an opportunity to serve the society. By serving people who cannot afford to go to court, who need to knock at the door with only some pro bono help. So these are certain things which you do in this profession. So you should be nice to your people, you should be very good to your colleagues, and there's no way a person will not succeed, whether a person is going to the top of the profession, whether they're in the first 10, whether they're in the first 100, whether he's doing well for himself, that's relative. As long as one case a day gives you satisfaction, you should be all very happy. Even if you're arguing one case in 1 week or 2 weeks and then you are happy that you have done your bit, then that's it, that will take you long.
On the same note, sir, you having studied in Guntur, then again shifting to the Supreme Court, was there any language barrier, sir? Because in Delhi, almost everyone speaks Hindi. And did this language issue impede your practice in any way in the Supreme Court, sir?
No, it didn't. Thanks to my schooling, all my education was English medium. So that way the language barrier was not a problem for me.
Sir.
Even now, I am not very proficient in Hindi, it doesn't make a difference. So, language was slightly a barrier in Hyderabad, because most of my clients were people from the old city. And I had to take the support of my clerk. But in Delhi, there was absolutely no barrier, because you mainly deal with lawyers and not clients. So, that way, language was not a problem.
And coming to the Supreme Court, sir, everyone knows that initially you gave your consent to be elevated as a judge of the Supreme Court and later you withdrew again. So can you talk a little bit about that, sir?
I was enjoying my profession very much and I never wanted to be a judge. Actually, I was offered to be a high court judge very early in my career when I was about 42, 43 years. But I did not want to be a judge because I set my eyes on becoming a successful lawyer in the Supreme Court. But destiny is such that I was being asked to become a judge. And when I said no in 2014, everybody said that that might not have been the right decision because being directly elevated to the Supreme Court is not does not happen often, and then only a few people would get a chance to be directly elevated. But I was not very happy in shifting sides, and then being there as an advocate would have given me more satisfaction. But for some reason or the other, I thought just destiny was chasing me, and that's how I accepted in 2016. Though I don't repent that decision now, I've been steadfast in telling everyone, including in public, that my life as a lawyer was more challenging than that of a judge, and I enjoyed being a lawyer more, and I never ceased to be a lawyer. So that's how. It all depends on perceptions.
And on the same note, sir, after having elevated as a judge, did your perception of law or your philosophy of law did it undergo any change? And if so, like, what was the change?
The basic philosophy of a judge is relatable to his life. The social background from which a person comes from, the experiences of a person during his life before becoming a judge play a very important role in tuning his philosophy. As a judge, I need not have changed much because I was practicing in the Supreme Court for about 20 years, 21 years. So I knew exactly the demands of being a judge, and I knew exactly what are the duties of a judge. A judge owes his existence to the society. He is there for the purpose of protecting the rights of individuals and ensuring that the constitution is followed by all branches of law. The rule of law being maintained by all concerned is the most important duty of a judge. There will be several instances where there is some sort of a dilemma in the mind of a judge as to whether he should take a particular decision or not. And decision making, especially in close cases, would be a difficult task, but by experience you keep learning as to what is right, what is wrong. There might have been a number of wrong decisions that we have taken, but that's how it is, being the final court, there being no appeal against the Supreme Court. So it's quite an onerous duty, rather, because you have to be very, very careful about what you're doing, because you don't want to be erring too much. But still, being human beings, judges also are fallible. They commit errors. But the most important job of a judge, according to my perception, is upholding the constitution and then not leaving the path of integrity and impartiality. And I always felt that discharging the duties of a judge is some godly function, because there are two people who are coming to you crying for justice, and then you have to decide as to who is right or wrong. When I said that the discharge of duties is a godly function, the judge should not feel that he is a demigod. The judge is also like any other public servant in this country who is discharging his duties which are given to him under the constitution. And the judge also has to have his feet firmly on the ground should not lose track of the realities of life, should also be closely connected to the society, understand the problems of the people of this country, because according to the provisions in the Constitution, whatever a Supreme Court judge says is the law. And it is the law that runs through the vast country of India. So you should also realize that this power comes with a responsibility. So there are so many difficult situations that a judge faces in the discharge of his duties. And somebody has faced, placed confidence in you that you will do well, so you will have to really discharge your functions in a responsible manner. So I have always followed that path of rectitude, and I have never thought that a judge is somebody who has dropped from heaven. So whatever job is given to you has to be done in a proper manner. That's how I proceeded.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think is the reasons of courts in India to not function like courts in the US or UK, especially when it comes to the time it takes to dispose of a case or to comply a court order? Because complying with a court order is yet another task.
The main problem is the number of cases that are filed in court and the pendency of cases. There are more than 5 crore cases in this country. The number of judges that we have to dispose of these cases is very less in comparison to the judges that are available in the Western countries. You can't compare India to the Western countries because we are a completely different country in terms of the populace, in terms of the problems that we have, especially in the judicial system of India. It is humanly impossible for even the double of the number of judges that we have to keep pace with the number of cases that are filed. Most of the judges, they work hard, they do their job and discharge their duties to the best of their ability. Even they work from 10 o'clock to 5 o'clock every day, and they write judgments on time, but still, I don't think it will be easy for the pendency to come down. The Niti Aayog recently submitted a report where they said that even to clear off the pendency, it's going to take about 300 years. With new cases coming in, it might be more difficult. When I became a judge, one of the judges told me that you are a judge to deliver justice and not to clear the backlog. That's not how it is. Because if the judges are thinking only of clearing the backlog, then they are not doing justice. There are two people who are coming to you asking you to decide a dispute between them. If I just keep dismissing cases without hearing them, that's not how the court should function. So they'll have to definitely give an opportunity which will take time, understand the case. So what is more important is that a case also has to be properly decided. So Supreme Court might be having a less number of pending cases, but that's also huge. We have about 70,000 cases that are pending in the Supreme Court. We have 34 judges, 17 benches working. All of them do their work very well. To the best of their ability, most of them are very efficient. Why all of them are very efficient? The fact that they've come to the Supreme Court, you can't have any comment on them. Even the high courts also, with about 950 judges in this country or 1,000 judges. So they're all trying to do their best, but it's not possible to reduce this pendency. The number of cases that are taken up by a Supreme Court judge or a high court judge in this country is phenomenal. When I keep speaking to judges from outside, the number of cases they do in a year, we do in about a week, mm-hmm. or even less than a week. Mm-hmm. When I tell people that I used to hear about 60-65 cases a day, so they really are shocked as to how an individual can do so many cases. Mm-hmm. Because the number of cases there are less. So their efficiency also is more because they only keep doing a less number of matters. But that's how litigation is there in their countries. So litigation is not as cheap as it comes in India in foreign countries. If somebody wants to go to court, he would be willing, he would also be ready to pay the costs of the other side. And if he loses the case, then there's going to be a huge financial liability on him. So our legal system is completely different that way. Every small case goes to court, and then every court, every case also reaches the Supreme Court, sometimes mostly to the high courts. And all these cases have to be heard. There's no way court judges can say that I don't want to hear this case, and this is of no value. All these things can't be said by court. Every case that is brought before a judge has to be heard. So we are in a sui generis situation. In law, sui generis is completely separate. So a unique situation. So you can't compare ourselves with other countries. But still, I think all the judges together are doing a good job. And then they're trying to do their best. People have confidence in judiciary because they still feel that this is an institution which they can go to.
In this very illustrious career of yours, sir, which achievement brings you the most amount of joy and pride?
I'm not happy with what I have achieved. And I think that there's a lot more which I can do.
What exactly is that lot more, sir? Can you please elaborate?
In whatever I'm doing now, see, I'm doing arbitrations, which is again a quasi-judicial job. And I want to be doing something on the international front. So let us see. Yes. You're a young man, you come back to me after 5 years, I'll tell you what I will say.
And finally, sir, almost every person who's of my age wants your answer for this. That is, how much time do you spend every day on your phone? Because by the end of every week, your iPhone will give you the details of how much time you've spent every day on the phone.
I don't use the mobile phone much. I was not using it much, but now I'm forced to do it because after COVID, the courts as well as quasi-judicial tribunals have started functioning virtually. Mm-hmm. Now, I do a number of arbitrations virtually. Mm-hmm. All the material in thousands of pages in each arbitration is on my iPad. So, I've stopped looking at papers. Mm-hmm. I only read my iPad, and even during my arbitrations, I use only the iPad because I have a liquid text on my iPad. It's also difficult now to carry so many papers everywhere we go. So that way my screen time has increased because what all I read is on my iPad or on my desktop in the office. Earlier I was not very well adept to it, but COVID has taught us this change. So I've adapted myself to the technology and I'm very comfortable with it now. So that way there's a lot of screen time, at least 10 hours a day, because the work is also on it's on a computer or on my iPad. Even when I have a physical hearing, like cross-examination of witnesses, all my material is there. Even when I'm hearing the lawyer's arguments, the material is there on the iPad. So that way it is at least 10 hours, at least. When you go back home also, you keep working, it might increase to another 2 hours to 4 hours.
It's been very nice speaking to you, sir. Thanks for accommodating.
Thank you and wish you all the best.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, sir.